I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. Today, the art, architecture, and history of MARTA.
MARTA has had this role of taking people through parts of the city they might not otherwise see, and often is going down these rail corridors that are the backbone of Atlanta, the reason for being of Atlanta, this industrial wasteland in some places, revitalized wasteland, now urban renaissance in other areas. It's really just exciting to move through these different parts of the city and to see it.
The bottom line is the average human being, no matter where you live, wants to go to be able to visit their friend. They want to be able to go to the doctor. They want to be able to go shopping. They want to go to their job. They want to go to the grocery store. I mean, every human, that's what's amazing about transportation, is it's a very real thing for everybody. And some are able to do that easier than others. And that's kind of the problem.
Well, if you think about cities and how they developed historically, it was really, cities were really designed to be about how far you could walk, or if you were lucky and you were wealthy enough, about how far you could ride a horse. You know, we talk about suburban sprawl today like it's a bad thing, but in the 19th century, and especially in the early parts of the 20th century, urban planning was more about spreading cities out because they had become so dense that they had become unhealthy. Atlanta at that time was a relatively small city, so it wasn't as big a deal here, but still you had this desire, especially among the part of wealthier folks, to live outside the city, to have green space, cleaner air. Basically having a street that wasn't covered in cow manure and horse manure was a big deal. So transit at that time was really an upper class mode of transportation.
I mean, there's a driver that picks me up in front of my house today and drops me off at the train station, and the train driver takes me to my office. I have a chauffeur. You know, I mean, it's actually a lot easier than people realize. And talk about creativity and livelihood. I mean, you don't even have to have just art to be creative. The people and the colors and the experiences and
it's like being at an urban aquarium or something. You know, you're able to observe and your mind can wander because you're traveling.
People go to Paris and New York and all these places and go, wow, that was fantastic. It was great. And they come here and they don't say, I want that here.
My guests today are Heather Alhadeff, a senior transportation planner at Perkins & Will.
You know, in developing real estate world, location, 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 in my mind, I just insert access, 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 because really that's what location means, is that I can quickly access what I'm looking for.
Paul Grether, the new manager of streetcar development for MARTA.
It was all about rapid transit. That was the branding. If you almost look at these old artists' renderings of the stations, architectural renderings, it has this kind of George Jetson look to it. You know, it's modern, it's clean, it's sleek, big open stations. This was rapid transit.
Brian Bell, co-founder of Buildings Architects.
Getting people to snap out of where they're going or what they're reading or, you know, what they're going to cook for dinner, what's running through their minds is part of the challenge we face. We want to try and do that.
And Ted Freeman, an industrial designer and creator of the Hotlanta Fan sculpture.
Well, I have a sketchbook full of ideas. I love to sketch, thumbnail sketches, and thinking of puns and thinking of what really does Atlanta mean to me. And it was change, and therefore the melting kind of symbolizes change, because Atlanta's changed so much since I moved here about 15 or 20 years ago.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, MARTA.
Take the A train to go to Sugar Hill way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you'll find you've missed the quickest way to Harlem. Hurry, get on, now it's coming. Listen to those rails a-thrumming. Get on the A train. Soon you will be on Sugar Hill in Harlem.
But to tell the story of MARTA, one can't begin with the subway. That would quite literally be putting the cart before the horse.
In September of 1871, there was actually the first streetcars were not electrically powered. They were horse powered. Turned out that the horses, just like the weather today, were not so good at handling the heat. So they switched to mules. So there was a mule car line that operated from downtown Atlanta near Five Points, just south of Five Points, to what was then the village of Whitehall's Tavern, which later became West End. And that was the first transit line in Atlanta. It was rail, but it was powered by two mules.
And I think this surprises a lot of people that they don't realize that originally transit, before cars were at all even in a twinkle in somebody's eye, the streetcars and trolleys were funded by the private sector.
Transit at that time was all private enterprise. And so the companies would go to the city of Atlanta and ask for a franchise agreement that would grant them access to the street, essentially to lay their tracks there. And in return for that franchise agreement, the city would regulate the fares and would regulate the service. So they were essentially a regulated monopoly. It was really, especially in the early parts of the 20th century, streetcar construction parallel to railroad construction, transportation was kind of the dot-com boom of the day. And so there were lots of companies chartered and capitalized. A lot of Northeastern money came into the South. This was the Reconstruction era of carpetbaggers, all that kind of stuff. And so a lot of these companies never really got off the ground. There was a lot of, just like there were when, you know, the mortgage fraud of today, the dot-com fraud of the past, were a lot of speculative investments that were made. And a lot of these companies were linked to real estate developers. So you would go out into a rural area outside a city, buy up all the land, then attempt to make it accessible and valuable by building a streetcar line to it, and then sell off the plots at a profit.
I'm Joel Hurt, and I'm building a development called Inman Park, and it's at the end of Edgewood Avenue, and I've got all these houses and these lots of lands that I'm going to sell. I need to get folks to that to buy it. So they didn't see it as a loss or a subsidy, or they saw other value and benefits of getting people there. And that's when it worked. And so the streetcars and the trolley systems were very successful. We had hundreds and hundreds of miles.
But transit wasn't just big business for the land developers. Over time, the network of smaller transit operators consolidated, and they formed not only a more cohesive system, but helped shape a whole new company, Georgia Power. With horses replaced by electric streetcars, it was a very natural and very profitable arrangement. And so things continued until...
In the 1920s, you started to get these good roads movements as the private automobile, but also the bicycle, actually, started to come into vogue as a mode of transportation. Most roads at that point were unpaved. Actually, the roads that were paved were the ones that had streetcar lines in them, because the cities would obligate the streetcar companies to pave them in return for putting the tracks in. So as these political movements to improve roadway conditions pushed forward, there was legislation passed both at the federal level and at the state levels, including in Georgia, to begin the motor fuel taxes. And so that started to create roadway trust funds at state and local levels that started, and even in some cases at city levels, like in the city of Atlanta, that started to create enough funding to start improving roads. So now you're in a situation where the government is subsidizing your competition.
And very quickly, the private businesses saw the writing on the wall. Profits were down, expensive infrastructure overhauls were required, and all the while, the automobile was fast becoming the de facto mode of transportation in the city. Such was the landscape until the late 1950s, when a sea change in thinking at the federal level brought public transportation back to the fore.
MARTA was chartered as almost, if you think about, and even more so if you look at the early planning documents, it was meant to be parallel to the highway system. It was meant to be high-speed trains that went out to the suburbs and brought commuters into town. So it was meant to function much like the freeway system was designed to function.
People were saying, okay, we need to build this highway system, and we also need to have a transit system, and that they're together, that will work.
Well, MARTA was created in 65. It was simply a planning agency. It had a staff of two or three people, and they developed these long-range transit plans for this high-speed rail commuter system in the hopes of attracting these new federal funds that were becoming available. I mean, that's really what was driving the system in the beginning. If you look at the timeline, in 1964, the Mass Transit Act passes at the federal level. Immediately that same year, the state of Georgia amends its constitution through voter referendum to make transit a part of the function of state government, because before it was illegal for state government to even consider legislation for transit. Then in 1965, they passed the act, the MARTA Act. And then in 1968, they hold the first voter referendum. And it was interesting. It was a property tax-based referendum only in Fulton and DeKalb counties for a rail-only system. And it failed by an overwhelming margin for a lot of reasons, mainly opposition to property taxes. Folks in the suburbs were very opposed to the property tax issue. They didn't feel like the system that was being proposed served them. And then folks in the city basically said, we use buses. So if you're going to let the bus system fail while we build this rail system, we're voting no. It was a big lesson learned on the part of the business community, on the part of MARTA, on the part of the local governments. And so in the early 70s, the decision was made to try and replan a system that would appeal to a much broader segment of the regional population.
And what that plan was is the MARTA we know today, encompassing not just rail, but an integrated bus system as well, and funded by a one-penny sales tax. After there was agreement that MARTA should be, there was still a matter of deciding what MARTA would be, or, more precisely, where it would be. Such questions were as much political as they were technical. This was the 1960s, after all. The civil rights movement was dividing the city, and MARTA had to both physically and philosophically bridge that divide. Looking at a map of MARTA today, one can see the conflicted outcome of these delicate negotiations. But the architecture of these stations themselves express a different narrative. Brian Bell of Buildings Architects explains.
Most of the stations were designed to have what I think is an obvious impact, stature as architecture. There's a civic component and a real enjoyment of their existence, an expression of MARTA within the city. Five Points, Garnett Station, Civic Center, the King Memorial Station is a great example, the way it's 50, 80 feet up to the roof off the ground and flies over the Oakland Cemetery, and just tremendously heroic. And there's a lightness to a lot of the concrete work where the concrete is hovering in the air, seemingly unsupported or cantilevered great distances, and it counteracts that heaviness of the material, what we associate with the material. That was, at the time, very exciting, I hesitate to say conceptual basis for the work, but sculptural basis for the work, to design spaces that had that sense of this is the modern city and Atlanta is a modern place. That's exciting. I still get that feeling when I'm in a lot of those stations.
Describing MARTA stations as sculpted rather than built is actually an oddly appropriate way of thinking about them. One of the more interesting and little known aspects of MARTA's finances is that 1% of its total budget is required to go to art.
There was a requirement in the federal program that funded transit that 1% of the budget for new systems be allocated to arts and transit. And so as a result of that, a lot of these systems were required to become art curators, even though that wasn't really what they were set up to be. And the MARTA system in particular, I think, benefited from it tremendously, especially because we have different architecture at each station, so the art is incorporated differently in each of the stations.
And while MARTA has used these funds for grand projects, including the preservation and integration of entire facades of pre-existing buildings, torn down to make room for new stations, some of the most memorable pieces are actually smaller in scale. One of the newest works, and the one creating probably the most buzz this summer, is Hotlanta Fan, a sculpture by Ted Freeman.
You know, if you Google Hotlanta right now, I think you're very likely to find that fan. And MARTA and art, you might be very likely to find it too.
It's become a phenomenon, right?
It has. It definitely has. It was in the New York Times, and it was in the Wall Street Journal, the Daily Mail in England, and it's been on a lot of design blogs, and it's still going. It's quite amazing. I'm thrilled.
Well, let's tell people what this is visually, and why you think it became a phenomenon.
Okay. Basically, it was a response to a design project that was asking what Atlanta means to you. And you had to only use two sheets of Corian white opaque material, which is like a countertop material. And I thought about a lot of different things. And one of the things that when I was just sketching silly stuff was a fan that was melting. And the pun behind that was Hotlanta fan, because what does Atlanta mean to you? Well, it's kind of hard to define, but I'm a fan of Hotlanta, and the fan, therefore, is melting. So it seemed like, oh, my gosh, that's perfect, because it's been real hot in the South for a couple of years, as long as I can remember, I guess is fair to say. But right now we're going through a warming spell, maybe some people would say. And so it just so happened that the week that it was unveiled, I think we had over 100 degree temperature several times that week. So that's one thing about it. But it also in the station, you can it's a surprise. You know, I think in the MARTA station, we hadn't been used to seeing such a blatant piece of art that's in your face like that. It's stark, it's white, it's oversized. And, you know, I think we've seen it effectively done in airports for years. Airports that have great sculptures and works of art that you can see while you're just not doing anything but really moving from one space to another space. And it's a really great example of how an alternative way the system can work to get art in the community.
You can see Ted Freeman's melting fan sculpture at the Five Points MARTA station, or for a quicker glance, check it out on our website at sidewalkradio.com. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. Today's show, MARTA, brought to you by Perkins and Will. As much as the art of MARTA can symbolize and force us to grapple with what MARTA represents for the city, it can't answer the more immediate and more fundamental question of what we want MARTA to be.
I want it to connect people and places and make Atlanta a more urban city, more urbane city, more layers of interesting public spaces. The stations are like seeds that were planted that could have had that impact. I don't think they've had it yet.
I'm personally jealous that my grandfather's generation and to some degree my parents' generation had better travel options than I do now. And somehow we as a country have slowly accepted that. And I think that's what's happening is people are going, wait a minute, this isn't working.
Over the last 50 years, the city of Atlanta has changed and most importantly grown. It has far outpaced the growth of MARTA. And even more critically, it's outpaced the funding of MARTA.
If you think about what's happening now, MARTA, the organization, you know, has reached for a while now, probably over 10, 15 years, has kind of reached the limit of the kind of system that can be operated given the current penny sales tax.
Basically what happens is as the economy goes, and this is not, you know, I don't care what your political stance, this is just the fact. When it gets costlier to drive, you even have more people saying, all right, I'm going to try the train. So you actually have, as the economy goes down, more people riding. The problem is the way we, and many places have done, so it's not totally unique to us, but the way we've decided to fund our transit system is through a sales tax. And as we all know, nobody's buying things. Sales tax drops. The funding for MARTA drops. So at the same time that they're having greater demand on their system and more users, is the same time they're getting less money. In order to stay afloat, they have to cut service and raise the fares. Yet it's at the very time when we need expanded service and it to be cheaper for people so more people can use it. So it's an inverse relationship, and it doesn't make any sense. I don't think any business would allow themselves to operate that way. Unfortunately, we apply that to the business of moving people.
What is happening is the whole organization is transitioning. It's very interesting to watch, but as our infrastructure is aging, both bus and rail, there's a huge need to reinvest. We've overhauled our rail fleet. You have to replace escalators and elevators, train control systems, lighting systems. I mean, we're a system of systems. Buses have to be replaced. Bus garages have to be upgraded to meet the newest technology in vehicles. You know, all that kind of stuff is always going on. And so our capital program has really switched from an expansion-based program into a state of good repair program.
If you look at maps of where the low-income and affordable housing is, it's centered in very specific areas. But if you look at the map of where the lower paying jobs or the entry level jobs are, they're scattered throughout this whole region. I know people that have physically said, I see in the one ads, I see a flyer for a job and I can't get there for that job. I'm looking for jobs and I physically can't get there because the train doesn't go there or the bus doesn't go there. And they have family and friends and needs to take care of and pay for. And it just seems That to me is the stuff that just, and I think you find that's why most people are frustrated. Whether you're in that financial position or not, it doesn't make sense. And people are saying, we want more. And not only do we want more, we want it to look good, and we want it to be designed well, and we want to love the places we're in. So it's not just the bare bones. It's also make sure it's done in a manner that we can all be excited about these spaces.
Some of the stations, they've been remodeled. Some, like Five Points, have been remodeled very recently. But they haven't fundamentally changed their face to the city. What they can be as igniters of an urban situation, like mixed-use developments, not just a government building, not just one thing, but 10 things.
The future of Atlanta, of what it can be, is truly multimodal, which means, you know, even driving your car, you're a pedestrian at some point. That's multimodal. So can I take a bike there? Can I walk there safely? Is there a sidewalk for me to get to the train? Is there a carpool spot for me and my carpool person to park at once we get there? Are these all these, you know, it's a very multimodal perspective. And Atlanta has the opportunity to really get that right.
MARTA as a system, as an idea, I get excited about that in a similar way to the architecture, because it's contemporary. It is, you know, I don't know if cars will be here in 50 years, but I'm sure MARTA will be, you know, because it brings people together. It allows people to get from point A to point B and communicate, commerce, and it's efficient. It makes sense.
If you can imagine highways, there were certain segments that were built. You know, this segment from here to here will be built. And people were debating, is it from here to here? Is it here to there? Which one's going to be built? Eventually, you didn't think of it as this segment. You thought of it as, I'm going from point A to point B. And I happen to go, at one point I'm on a state route, at another point I'm on a county road, and one point I'm on a city road. And I don't think about it. And they're different roads. Some are smaller, some are bigger, whatever. So you don't think about you're going on to different projects. You're just going from A to B. Eventually, I think the way the Beltline and MARTA and the whole system of transit and streetcar and everything will fit in is that you'll be going from A to B, and you may actually be going on one point the streetcar project and one point the Beltline project and another point the MARTA project. But really, you'll just be sitting in the same, you know, you might have one transfer, but conceivably, you could be on the same vehicle and traversing different places using different quote-unquote projects. But eventually, we'll just see it as I took a transit vehicle and I went from here to here.
You've been listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'd like to thank my guests today, Heather Alhadeff, Paul Grether, Brian Bell, and Ted Freeman. And I'd especially like to thank our sponsor, Perkins & Will. I'm Gene Kansas. We'll see you next month.